Hey, Leading Learning listener, if you represent a membership organization looking for ways to expand your online course catalog rapidly with high-quality content, we have good news.
At leadinglearning.com/AMA, you can find out how to make online training from the American Management Association available to your learners.
Through a partnership between AMA and Tagoras, the parent company of Leading Learning, you can give your learners access to more than 70 e-learning modules covering essential business topics ranging from leading and innovating to managing projects effectively to working in hybrid teams.
For details on how to grow your catalog with courses from a true global leader in management training, visit leadinglearning.com/AMA.
If you're a leader or an aspiring leader in the business of lifelong learning, you're in the right place. I'm Salisa Steele.
And I'm Jeff Cobb, and this is the Leading Learning Podcast.
Welcome to episode 232 of the Leading Learning Podcast, where we talk with Jim Fong, Chief Research Officer at the University Professional and Continuing Education Association, and founding director of UPSEA's Center for Research and Strategy. Salisa, what do you and Jim talk about?
I attended UPSEA's Marketing and Enrollment Management Seminar, MEMS for short, in December 2019, and Jim delivered the closing keynote looking at a millennial-run world. So I wanted to make sure and ask him about generational differences and preferences and the impact of those differences and preferences on work and learning. Jim's also a self-professed trend watcher, so I got his take on what's on the horizon for learning. He talks about how much of higher ed still seems wed to the degree, but he doesn't think that's the future of education. He sees an increasing need to unbundle and stack and account for non-credit learning. He thinks alternative credentials now are where online learning and online degrees were 10 years ago. There were some holdouts, but pretty much everyone is now doing online. And he thinks in the near future, all higher ed institutions will be offering alternative credentials. And I see that as both an opportunity and a challenge for learning businesses, validation for at least some of what they're doing and that they're on the right path, but also potentially more competition from higher ed for those same learners in the future.
And so what reflection questions do you have to offer for this episode? And as a reminder, listeners, you can find those reflection questions in the show notes available at leadinglearning.com/episode232.
So Jim talks about the fourth industrial revolution. He talks about automation and the implications and impact of newer generations on learning and working and events like virus outbreaks. So the first reflection question I'll offer is, how is your learning business attuned to respond to these societal shifts? What are you doing to make sure what you offer and how you offer it best fits current needs and demand? Second, Jim talks about a creepiness index that he and his team are working on. Their work, of course, is focused on higher ed, but I definitely see application for learning businesses as well. So look at what questions you're asking your would-be learners. Are you getting creepy, i.e., are you asking for too much too soon? And what value are you giving in return to start and nurture a relationship with your prospects?
Well, that second question around nurturing relationships with prospects puts me in mind of the value ramp. And that's a tool of ours that can help organizations think through the relative value of their offerings and make sure that there are some available for free. And we usually stress free in terms of money, but Jim's comments make it clear that it's also important to offer some things that are free or close to it in return for information you're asking for. Not everything should be behind a sign-up form. And we'll be sure to include a link to the value ramp in the show notes. For now, on to the conversation with Jim Fong.
Hello and welcome to the Leading Learning Podcast. I'm Salisa Steele and today I'm joined by Jim Fong. Jim is the Chief Research Officer at the University Professional and Continuing Education Association and Founding Director of UPSEA's Center for Research and Strategy. Jim, welcome to the Leading Learning Podcast.
Thank you, Salisa. It's a pleasure being here.
So I would like to give you a chance here at the outset to highlight for listeners a little bit more about yourself and your work so that they can have that in mind as backdrop for our conversation.
Well, that's great. As you mentioned, I'm the Chief Research Officer at the University Professional Continuing Education Association, otherwise known as UPCEA or UPCEA. And what I do for the association and its 400 members and its corporate partners along the way is I'm responsible for a lot of the trend research, a lot of the member research, and some level of custom research for members that require additional services. So as the market evolves around business and around learning and the business of learning and educational trends here, I get more involved there, as well as with demographics and new marketing technologies and other things like that. My role is here is to help our members be ready for the future and be sustainable for the most extent, you know, to also be profitable and also to serve their missions in higher education.
Well, great. And so, you know, as you talked about there, you know, a big area of focus for you is marketing and it is research. And so I would just love to know kind of what drew you to this line of work and maybe also what do you see as the importance of research and marketing, particularly in this context of lifelong learning?
Well, I've always been involved with marketing. Early in my career, I was very heavily into the analytics. I wanted to be a sports statistician, and back in the late 80s, early 90s, that's what I wanted to do. But I found myself being very intrigued with society's kind of lack of analytics and decision making. How could a baseball player, you know, hit 400 home runs and bat 180, you know, get millions of dollars? And I was kind of shocked at that. But then I looked at society was doing the same thing, and so. I really focused in on the analytics side of things, but then I got kind of into the people watching and consumer behavior. And I felt like that was the underpinning of marketing and strategy development, was looking at how do you measure things. And then I joined Penn State University, back in the late 90s. I left about 11 or 12 years ago. But there during that process, I looked at internal processes in marketing, especially about how marketing was really, back in the late 90s, early 2000s, it was really a beauty contest. Whoever had the best creative won. And I really felt like, you know, it was all about enrollments. It was all about, you know, return on investment. It was all about growing market share. And so I really took a passion in terms of working within higher education. And at the time, Penn State, I was involved with UPCEA, but as a member at that point. And I always felt like, you know, the association needs more, the community needs more. And so later on in life, after I got a master's degree in analytics and statistics, I got an MBA, and you know, I worked with some consulting companies, and I kind of pulled it all together and said to myself, education is the place where I want to make an impact.
If you want to make an impact with your education, professional development, or other learning products, our sponsor for this quarter can help. WebCourseWorks is a leading learning technologies and consulting company that is forging a path of innovation in the e-learning industry. The company's experiences and expertise guide its partners to become the leading providers of education in their fields. WebCourseWorks channels organization learning efforts to deliver on the promise of revolutionary performance improvement. CourseStage, the learning management system from WebCourseWorks, is built for organizations and professional development initiatives. It enables organizations to customize learning experiences, track user success, and make data-driven decisions. CourseStage LMS is designed specifically to handle continuing education and professional development activities for organizations who want to grow their learning business. Access a demonstration of the CourseStage LMS as well as other valuable webinars from WebCourseWorks at leadinglearning.com/WCW. You can also download the WebCourseWorks 2020 e-learning hype curve predictions by going to leadinglearning.com/hype. And now, back to the interview as Salisa asks Jim for his take on the practical value of learning businesses looking at generational differences.
I know that one of the areas that you've given a lot of thought and focused on is around the impact of different generations on the workplace and really the world in general. And so I'd be curious to get you to share some of your thoughts around the practical value of looking at generational differences for organizations that are focused on lifelong learning and continuing education and professional development.
Well, yes, absolutely. And I think it's actually more than that. I think it's a convergence of a lot of things that are happening right now. what we're seeing here is we're seeing education going one direction, and you know, most of the players in education are clinging onto degrees. Our economy is really moving toward what's been called the fourth industrial revolution here. A lot of high tech, a lot of automation, a lot of AI, a lot of kind of data-driven decision making. And along the way, we're having this generational uprising, which is happening. And in the US, we're having a presidential election year. I think all of these things are a perfect storm in terms of what education will look like in the future. I think if a lot of things were happening, you know, separately or independently, 2020 wouldn't be such a big year for higher education, but it is. Because what's actually happening here is that we have millennials that are now kind of 24 to 38 years old. They're the biggest cohort in the workplace, yet now they're just starting to catch kind of their power in terms of the economy. And then we've got a controversial kind of political system where their voice is actually being heard a little bit more. On the other hand, you know, there's a lot of debate on this, but the boomer generation is starting to retire at a faster rate than it was over the last 5 years. And that's actually kind of diffusing power into the other generations. And then we've got this totally different generation, this Gen Z generation, which is roughly about 14 years old to about 23 years old. And they're a smaller cohort. They have a lot of similarities with millennials, but they're different. And so I think that these phenomena, given the economy, given automation, are really going to change this whole industry of higher education. And that's where that, and coupled with marketing technologies, and there's a lot of shifting from obviously traditional broadcast media to digital media, but even getting deeper into the psyche of the Generation Z learner and the young millennial, I think is going to be pretty fabulous in the upcoming years.
Well, so I know that you mentioned automation a little bit in there, and I'm just curious about some of the other kind of like practical implications of this sort of, you know, tipping point that might be happening as the millennials come into more of their power, maybe assume more managerial roles or come into the higher leadership. I don't know if it's around automation or around other things, but, you know, what do you begin to see as some of the implications of this generational shift?
Well, what's actually happening, and, you know, I know that it's a timing issue right now, but we've got, you know, we've got a virus going around right now, and we've got people that are very concerned about it. And so what's actually happening here is that we've got people, you know, working at a distance, and we've got the service economy and other technologies really kind of rising up in terms of being a new kind of foundation for the future. We also have going on here is we had this shift in this very fast shift toward automation, and a lot of companies that are pouring a lot of R&D into this are fueling it behind this younger generation workforce. And then we've got a boomer generation, which is not necessarily comfortable with this type of technology here. And so they're almost giving way to it in a certain degree. And so what's actually happening is we've got a lot of upheaval, but we've got new workers in the workforce that are generally comfortable with technology. So I think they're going to be the natural fit in terms of the new developments. And I think in terms of, you know, being the fuel behind a lot of new developments there.
Mm-hmm. Well, that's very interesting, right? To see sort of how something like a virus might be sort of a further exacerbating trends that are already there and sort of pushing us maybe a little bit faster towards adoption of technology or have more heavy reliance on some of these technologies that are already out there, but again, suddenly become much more important because of particular situations that arise. Now, I know that one of the things that I saw recently was that you and your team had come up with a creepiness index, and I know this sort of ties into the generational differences because I know that you referenced Gen Z in that, but maybe let's just start first by having you explain to listeners, what is the creepiness index?
Well, actually, I'm impressed that you saw that because we were starting to release that out into our community. But what we've been doing for the last 3 years is I've had Gen Zers working for me, and so I can better understand them and understand their behavior. I've also helped them. Actually, I've also asked them to help me with this report called The Insider's Guide to Gen Z. And along the way, you know, as they're working with me, they're telling me that higher education has got it all wrong. And so they would go onto forums and fill out things and ask for things, and they get some very, very displeasing results. And so we started running, we started looking at our own membership and looking how they request information. And this new, this generation of young people, it's just the systems that higher education put in place don't mesh with them, and they're very creeped out by it. And so I had a bunch of actually a few Gen Zers put this scale with me, and we're still kind of working out some of the measurements of it. But what we've asked them, and we've actually asked our community, is that what kind of questions do you think young adults, new adult learners, you know, want or are willing to give? And so Gen Zers, when you ask them and you look at all the research behind abandoned shopping carts, they actually will give you their first name and their email address. And they might give you their last name, and then they want something back in return. They may actually also answer another question like, okay, how did you hear about us, or what are you interested in? But then higher education will ask many other questions. They will ask, you know, we have one institution that asks 27 questions of the adult learner, and we just think that's very lazy. You could actually do that 20 years ago when you had the power in terms of higher education, where you have the product and people wanted it. You can make them do stuff if they really wanted it. You don't have that. Higher education doesn't have that power anymore. So they need to develop the relationship. Otherwise, it gets creepy. And the research that we've been doing here has been, okay, once you get past three or four questions, it starts getting creepy when a higher education institution asks you about what is your, who's your employer? Or they also ask you, you know, where did you finish in terms of your class? Or, you know, have you taken certain certifications? And what's your work address? And all these things start developing a mode of creepiness. And so we've actually measured what people are doing from a baseline perspective, an acceptable perspective, and a creepy perspective. And we're finding a lot of folks asking really creepy, unnecessary questions because, one, they don't realize they don't have the power, or two, they're unwilling to build the relationship over two or three touch points.
Mm. I think that's a really interesting point, this idea of kind of needing to earn the information that you're asking for from a potential learner. And I know that you're working in this context of higher ed, and that's where this creepiness index is coming out of. But, I mean, maybe talk about what you see as some of the implications of this creepiness index, you know, kind of how might an organization that's offering learning make use of it or be better aware of, you know, where they might be sort of shading into creepiness?
Well, I think the fundamental for me is that organizations, higher ed or not, they need to know their customers. They need to understand who their customer is today and who will they be in the future and what others are doing to convert on them. The enrollment funnel is not any different from outside of higher education as it is within higher education. It just, what are those touch points in between, and how do you actually cultivate and nurture a relationship along the way? And how do you use technology at the right places? How do you use people at the right places? How do you use analytics throughout the whole process? How do you get organizational change along the way? How do you inform your, you know, your decision makers, your senior people, your whole organization about who this customer is and how they're converting in and what their needs are and what their what the information exchange is? And that whole trust factor really depends on knowing your customer and knowing what their values are. And I think that's, higher education is a step or two behind a number of other industries, but there's a lot of other industries that are really lagging. They're thinking that their consumer is still, or their customer is still a Gen Xer or a boomer, when in reality, they're a very, very savvy Gen Zer or young millennial.
And so if I'm understanding correctly, I mean, part of what you're talking about is that idea that, you know, kind of comes from other areas of marketing, that abandoned shopping cart. I mean, in essence, there are the sort of newer generations, is they're less willing to put up with those intrusive questions. And they're going to sort of reach that point where, like, they're going to end that relationship if it's not being nurtured. Is that correct?
Oh, absolutely. And they've grown up that way. They've they've done the whole crowdsourcing thing. They've done the whole, Tinder, Uber thing. And at the moment that they're not comfortable, and this generation is a little bit more sensitive, a little bit more fragile in terms of their psyche and stuff. And in fact, there's a lot of debate about their dependence on friends and their social networks and their family. So the moment they're uncomfortable, they go to these networks and they're saying, hey, University X is asked me some weird questions here. Is that typical? Or company B has asked me for credit card information. Sounds too early for it. Once they start to distrust you, and their brand loyalties are very, very different from millennials. They're more sensitive and they're more thoughtful and they actually process information better than other generations. And so while they're pulling all this information in the moment you create this unease or this creepiness, it's really hard to get that back. And that's why, there are certain companies that do very well, in terms of retaining their customers, especially these Generation Zers. And I'll just kind of make mention of one company, Chipotle. Chipotle's had a number of disasters out there regarding health and regarding YouTube videos and whatever, but they understand their customers and they're able to get that loyalty back. Unless you have that type of relationship or you have those countermeasures in place, you as a university or another organization be able to retain these customers? Or if you lose customers, how do you acquire them back? Having a knowledge of Gen Zers, young millennials, or any generation in this new economy, in this new way of learning, in this digital environment is ultimately critical in terms of success and, maintaining market share, profitability, and return on investment.
Mm. Well, I know that you're a trend watcher. And so I'd love to get your perspective on kind of, what the future holds. And I'm thinking relatively near term, maybe 5 years out or so. And so when you're thinking kind of big picture about what's on the horizon for learning, what do you think is going to have the biggest impact on what or how we learn?
Well, as I was mentioning about these Gen Zers and millennials here, regardless of where you stand politically here, I think they're going to find their voice. I think if their candidate wins, they're going to say, hey, we did this and we're going to do it again with something else. If their candidate doesn't win, they're going to say, okay, we're going to protest. We're going to have our voice heard here. So I think these new generations are going to reshape a lot of different things out here. I think, one of the things that we need to look at with education here is education has been bound very, very tightly under a nice little package called a degree. The degree was created, 50 to 100 years ago, actually even longer than that. But in the U.S., it really kind of took off post-World War II. It also even took off before that with the land grant acts, the Morrill Land Grant Acts. But it's been packaged for the second generation here, one that was heavily manufacturing based. And then it actually evolved into the third generation, the internet service sector. The fourth generation, I don't think it's actually built very well for that. I think what's going to happen is this degree has got to unbundle itself. And this next generation here of learners, they're used to being on Khan Academy. They're used to learning via YouTube. They're going to unbundle this nicely packaged degree package into smaller chunks. And we're seeing that right now. We're seeing badges happening. We're seeing people getting certificates. The things are starting to stack now. And now with the economy the way it is, and even society the way it is, and once that power shifts a little bit more to the millennials and Gen Zers, this stackable learning credential will mean more. And just because you've taken, something on a non-credit basis, it doesn't mean it shouldn't transfer into the same type of learning on a degree. And I think we'll see more and more of that as the data analytics and the predictive analytics and the assessment pieces get stronger as well, that they can say, okay, somebody that's learned how to communicate with multi-generational audiences in a credit mode and a non-credit mode, they know the same thing. So therefore, this 20 hours of learning that they got on a non-credit basis should be worth half a credit or something like that. Or they've earned all these badges, in terms of retaining the workforce and communicating and managing conflict. That should be worth, X amount of credits toward that human resource degree. I think the unbundling of education is just starting to happen right now. And that's where UPCA has really shifted a lot of its emphasis. although recent events will refuel the online learning environment around credit. It'll also fuel the online learning environment around non-credit. And so we're going to see a lot of new innovations, new ways of learning, and new accepted ways of learning. You know, no longer can the faculty at a university say, well, we only do credit. That's the only way. That's the only quality way to learn. This economy, this state of our world right now, coupled with all these factors all coming together at once, will really push towards new learning and acknowledgement that somebody with a lot of experience and that has learned on his or her own, you know, is actually capable of, you know, running a workforce or running a major system and is very successful in this economy. I think that's what we're going to learn. That's what we're going to see moving into the future.
So I'm hearing in that kind of an emphasis on alternative credentials, you know, what's out there besides the degree and this unbundling that you were talking about, and then also to an emphasis on competency, right? The sort of whether it was a 4-degree or a non-degree experience, if the individual actually acquired skills or knowledge that are needed to perform, then it doesn't really matter as long as that individual can perform.
Yes. And I think the other piece will be, you know, we have, you know, between 3,000 and 4,000 institutions of higher education in the U.S. And a lot of them are on shaky ground financially. And the unfavorable demographics are pushing for new ways of learning, new ways of revenue, new ways of engaging the population. So they've got to monetize them some way. And so I think universities, colleges and universities will, you know, this unbundling, you know, although it's not as profitable per unit as a degree or credit is, it's the reality of it is that they're going to have to find new streams of revenue. And so the business of running a institution of higher education is becoming more of a reality. And the new industry, the new economy is driving for that. Otherwise, new solutions will be created, you know, at a corporate level. And they already are. You know, we've got Google, we've got Amazon. They're all training their own workforce. Yes, they're engaging higher education for things, but they've become less dependent on them over the last, you know, 5 and 10 years. So I think that if higher education, they're starting to see the signals, and they're definitely seeing them, the financial signals that they're pushing for this model. And a lot of our new research is showing that it's not only supplementing the education, but it's also reskilling the workforce. Institutions that graduated people in certain degree areas are acknowledging the fact that they've got to supplement their education for this new economy. There's also been a lot of research that we've been doing and folks like Strata have been doing around the value of the liberal arts curriculum and how that's got to be almost competency-based and certificate and badge-based while they're actually in college and also, you know, post-college. There's a lot of things that can be enhanced, highlighted, and reskilled in terms of this new workforce, but this degree model is not the right model necessarily for the entire fourth industrial revolution here. It's important for the STEM fields, you know, but these other sectors that are evolving and the reskilling and things that are happening in healthcare aren't necessarily fully, you know, degree based. And so I think that's where we need to see a lot more innovation and willingness to change by higher education.
Mm-hmm. So other options available in that portfolio beyond degrees, which, as you were saying, may still have their value and relevance in certain places, but then these are other ways to be able to help other fields and folks continue to upskill, reskill, and remain relevant.
Yeah, and I think that's really important here. I think what you've really got to do here, I mean, higher education is an underpinning, obviously, of a job advancement and job security and other things like that, and being able to move between industries here. And so, whether or not it's a higher education institution or somebody else building that, you know, the long short of it here is that the economy needs that. And so in a perfect world here, what you really want here is you want people to be learning on their own. You want people to be learning from experts. You want people to be learning from their company and their work experiences. And then you want people to be learning from higher education, which is, you know, which is part of all those equations here. And all these things should be stackable and acknowledged in some form and some kind of credential. And these credentials should, in a perfect world, should feed into one another. A competency in a certain area, I should be able to be tested on that, and I should be able to get a badge from that. That badge hopefully could work toward a certificate. Many certificates should hopefully work toward, you know, maybe an associate's degree or a post-baccalaureate certificate or something bigger than that, that which ultimately could figure into a bigger degree, which ultimately could figure into, you know, who knows, a graduate degree or a doctorate, who knows, but or at least evolve into toward a, you know, advancements in the job or advancements in salary or just ways of contributing to society where, you know, the metrics may not be necessarily monetarily, but all these things kind of tie together. And I think that's where higher education, you know, needs to think beyond just that whole degree model. And it needs to kind of drive down toward the badging and certificate level. They're already involved with certificates. A lot of institutions are. And our new research shows that 70% of our members are currently providing some form of alternative credentialing, and another 26% plan on doing it. And so that foundation is being built. It's just how much can they reach in terms of demand? I mean, they need to generate a supply out there for the marketplace, but hopefully it'll coordinate with demand. Otherwise, business and industry will develop their own sources of training and education.
Well, that's fascinating. 70% already doing it and 26% planning. That's practically, you know, everyone in the near future, then it sounds like, will be involved in alternative credentials.
Yeah, and I think that's what we saw 10 years ago with online. There was a resistant few, but there was a lot of folks that were jumping into online, and then a second wave came in to develop to jump in the whole online degree market here. And those that didn't do the online thing either, you know, are not in business, or they've strengthened up other areas of their core businesses as well, or their core competencies within their institutions. And so I think that same thing is happening here. So, you know, 5-10 years out, I think we'll be more dependent on these non-credit forms of education.
Well, fascinating. And so we'll begin to kind of wind down, and I want to ask you as the next to last question, one that we ask all of the guests on the Leading Learning podcast, and it gets at some of your own personal learning. And the question is, what's been one of your most powerful learning experiences that you've been involved in as an adult since finishing your formal education?
Well, you know, I've never really stopped learning here. It's just what I chose to learn. You know, my wife has told me many times, you should go for your doctorate in higher education because you could finish this thing so quickly, you know, and I've kind of, you know, banked a lot on a few master's degrees, but then I'm always pulling up, you know, different podcasts, different videos. And, you know, I go to as many conferences as I can, just to keep on learning about what's on the next kind of horizon in terms of the next trend and whatsoever. So I try to immerse myself as well. I surround myself with Generation Z and millennials. I was very critical of millennials 5 or 6 years ago. I picked on millennials just like the boomers were picking on them now. I felt like, you know, this was an entitled generation. Was this generation too connected, you know, with their technology? The more I immerse myself and understood them, I realized that their skill sets and their strength was incredible. And I feel the same way with Generation Z. I think you immerse yourself in terms of what you want to learn, and you keep an open mind, and you listen to people, and you not get stubborn. And I think that's where really what opens up new modalities of learning in your brain in terms of what you can accomplish and whatsoever. Because I just think that having the greater appreciation of what you don't know and trying to figure that out. I've always been kind of a puzzle guy in trying to figure out a problem here. And that I think has been my most valuable experience over the last 5 years is listening to millennials and not believing in the fact that they're not believing in terms of the urban legend that they're self-entitled or whatsoever. They're just different. And in fact, they're in charge. They're going to be in charge of the economy right around the corner. And so I think coming down to that realism, and then the realism that, boy, this Gen Z is just an amazing generation. And, you know, yes, they like to take their selfies and they like their experience here, but boy, they just process information at a lightning speed. They use apps to make their life so much better. They're powerful from a communications and their own personal networks that you've got to open yourself up and you've got to learn these things and appreciate them. And I think that's been my biggest learning of the last, you know, 5 years.
I love that I hear in there both the aspects of social learning, that you're putting yourself in situations with these millennials, with Gen Zers, so that you are learning from them. There's also just that underlying curiosity and interest in how things tick, how the puzzle works and how you can solve it. So thanks for sharing that, Jim. And then as a final question, just if listeners want to learn more about you or your work or connect with you, where would you have them go?
Well, I can easily be reached through my UPCA network there, jfong@upca.edu. And I also have a blog off there. And then my LinkedIn profile, I've been putting a few things out there as well. And so I like to keep it in those types of environments here. Not really much into the self-promoting of Jim Fong here. And I want to really focus in on advancing higher education progress.
Well, wonderful. We'll make sure to include in the show notes access to the blog on UPSEA's site, and so that folks can get to it that way, and also your profile on LinkedIn. So thank you very much, Jim, for making time for this conversation.
Thank you for having me. It's been a real pleasure.
That concludes the interview with Jim Fong. To get show notes, go to leadinglearning.com/episode232, and the show notes will include the reflection questions. First, how is your learning business attuned to societal shifts? What are you doing to make sure what you offer and how you offer it best fits current needs and demand? Second, look at the questions you ask would-be learners. Are they creepy? I.e., are you asking for too much too soon? And what value are you giving in return to start and nurture a relationship with your prospects?
When you check out the show notes, you're going to see various options for subscribing to the podcast. And if you're getting value out of what you hear and you're not already subscribed, Jeff and I would be truly grateful if you would, because that helps us get some data on the impact of what we're doing.
And we'd also be grateful if you take just a minute to give us a rating on Apple Podcast. Just go to leadinglearning.com/Apple. Salisa and I personally appreciate your rating and review, but more importantly, those reviews and ratings help the podcast show up when people search for content on leading a learning business.
And we'd be grateful if you would check out our sponsor for this quarter. You can access a demonstration of the Course Stage LMS and other valuable webinars from Web Courseworks at leadinglearning.com/WCW. And you can grab their 2020 e-learning hype curve predictions at leadinglearning.com/hype.
Finally, please consider following us and sharing the good word about Leading Learning. You can find us on Twitter by going to leadinglearning.com/Twitter, on Facebook at leadinglearning.com/Facebook, and on LinkedIn at leadinglearning.com/LinkedIn. We also encourage you to use the hashtag Leading Learning on each of those channels. Wherever and however you do it, please do follow us and help spread the word about Leading Learning.
Thanks again, and see you next time on the Leading Learning Podcast.